73. Srila Sridhar Swami comments on these verses as follows. So these verses were the I'm quite far.
39.
Well, how to realize Krishna as the source of all avatars and the highest aspect of the absolute truth. Okay. Someone may say that the pastimes of the Lord are actually manifestations of material illusion, and they only appear to be spiritual under the influence of devotion to the Lord, as a glittering oyster shell may sometimes be mistaken if for silver. Right? Notice how he says, someone may say.
Yes.
So this is not just something, Prabhupada's using this, this is a standard, something that the acharyas, you know, function from. Mm-hmm. Right? Okay. So here he's saying is that someone may say that the pastimes of the Lord are actually material, and they only appear spiritual because of your devotion. You know, just like everybody's kid is, you know, dropped out of the heavenly planet, you know, like that. You know, so it's always it's like that. Whatever is important to you, that's it. So therefore, the spiritualness is just a sentiment, because who will be saying this? Their ideas, emotions, sentiment have nothing to do with spiritual, because right? They don't have any idea of the personal aspect. Right? This is not a fact. The Supreme Lord's pastimes are spiritual. They are not the ordinary activities of conditioned souls, but the Supreme Godhead's sport. This is confirmed by the description given in these two verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. In verses 37 to 39, realizing the Lord directly is Bhagavan. Sutta Goswami, Srila Sutta Goswami continues. The foolish with a poor fund of knowledge cannot know the transcendental nature of the forms, names, and activities of the Lord, who is playing like an actor in a drama, nor can they express such things neither in their speculations nor in their words. Footnote 33. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary on 1337, the Lord cannot be understood by material knowledge. By skill in dhyana or yoga, no ignorant person can understand the pastimes, names, and forms of the Lord through material mind and speech, since the Lord is beyond mind and words. He who is devoid of bhakti, the jnani, says that any object with the name and form is illusory. That notion is indicated by the word Kumanisha, person with bad intelligence. The Lord brought it, so it's bad intelligence. He doesn't say, so here, it means they're intelligent, but they're misapplying it. So therefore, if you misunderstand something, or don't apply something right, you're a fool. Right? Even if you have a very intelligent person, but they don't know how to function in a situation, it's foolish. Right? Does that make sense? So, this idea that what we're talking about here is really, really dull people, you know, IQ of 5 or something. You know, it's like, you know, them and a tomato are, you know, in serious competition. But we're not talking that. We're talking misapplication. Because otherwise, by material conditioning, we take anyone with any opulence that's good. Because we're trying to get opulence. Why? Because opulence can be enjoyed. Opulence can be controlled. Right? That's the whole point. Does that make sense? So we'll respect them. Oh, he's so intelligent. You know? But the point is that's not the actual position of intelligence. That's not the actual position of culture. Though, of course, because they have intelligence, they're respected for that intelligence. In other words, you're dealing with an impersonalist, you have to respect him for his intelligence. Right? Because they do think and they do use it, but it's misapplied. You know, just like a wealthy man comes to the temple, he may have attitude, but the point is he's respected because of his position of wealth. Or some, you know, politicians or someone from a position of power, they come, they may have attitude, but they're respected for that. You know, artist may come, he's respected for that. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So the culture, you deal nicely, but the point, the facts are, it's still less intelligent. Right? So what's the difference between an artist who is taking his art form, and he's so good at it, but he misapplies it into very strange things, right?
Yes.
And the intellectual who is so intelligent and misapplies his intelligence into so many strange things. Understand?
Yes.
It's all foolish. Yes.
How do we generally deal with these? I mean, we don't want to encourage this misapplication. But
no. It's just a matter of your talk. It means you see how they present it. Not a fact. It means, in other words, it's done without that emotion that they're bad. It doesn't mean it's done without commitment. It's just that, you know, it's done in a cultured way. Problem is that the example of that cultured way of dealing is, you know, with time getting less and less, you see in the society. Previously, you know, gentlemen could have totally different viewpoints and be best of friends.
Yes.
Because it's just a matter of, you know, they like each other and the moods, the qualities they have, but they might have different opinions, but they can sit and discuss it. They don't insult each other. But now the prominence, you know, it's more kind of like the, you know, the Hollywood way of dealing. You know, everything's yelling and screaming and everything like that. You know, lack of tolerance, lack of forgiveness, lack of, you know, any other, you know, good quality other than they got a lot of power and they got a very big gun. Right?
Interesting. At the same time, everybody wants to be very unique. So how's that going to work?
No, you can't. See, it means there has to be a common ground. So they'll say, the gentleman, well, everybody's boring. But, you know, the other one is everybody's crazy. It's not that they're different, right? It means you're walking down the street, right? And, you know, in a nice area where you could sit or congregate, then in any city, there's some group congregated there, right? And you can, by how they dress, how they stand, the attitude, there's a label for them. Everybody's being unique, but there's actually a label for them. Right? You can call them by that name. Right? Why? Because they all basically look the same. You know, the only difference is this guy's wearing a black top hat, that one's wearing a black bowler. That's how you tell the difference. Otherwise, everything else is the same. Right? And this one has short black fingernails, and that one has long black fingernails. You know what I'm saying? Right?
Yes.
But that's amongst them, that's their uniqueness.
Yes.
Right? So in other words, yes.
So in Prabodhananda Saraswati is saying, you know, with the straw between my teeth, you know, you are so you're such a sadhu. Now, please forget everything you've learned. And he's not actually... It's not like an indirect insult. He's actually feeling humble, and he really wants. He's coming from a compassion instead of.
Yes. Yeah. It's okay. That would mean if, in other words, here he's saying it's not so much the technique that's used. The technique is due to the character, right? It means if our own character is, we're actually trying to help.
Yes.
Then you'll find a way to help.
Yes.
Right? If you don't have the character, then you have to work a little bit more on technique. You just know, I'm supposed to be taller, I'm supposed to be humbler. Like that. But anyway, the point is that uniqueness is going to be there anyway, because every soul is different. So even they're in exactly the same environment, they're still going to respond differently. Right? Then you have the particular conditioning. So it's always going to be unique. But it's just a matter of people throw the uniqueness as whatever it is that they don't like, that's one group, and whatever they do like, that's unique. That's what I'm saying. It's not so unique. So this need for uniqueness, it's subtle. It's not actually gross, because in the gross way, nobody's that different. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Back to what was said, that the manifestation of material illusion is the pastimes of the Lord, that because of the devotion that the devotee feels, so it's illusion.
That's what the Mayavadis are saying.
But how is it refuted here? I don't see the connection.
No, they're not ordinary activities like that. This confirmed the description in the next two verses. He's just saying it's not a fact, and these next two verses are explaining. So he hasn't explained it there, Sri Goswami. Is that what you mean? Yeah, no, because he's taking these verses and going to do like that. That's why he says the foolish with a poor fund of knowledge. Means they have knowledge, but it means it's either the wrong, either they don't have enough information or they have the wrong information. Cannot know the transcendental name, nature of the forms, names, and activities of the Lord. That's the thing, is that because he's beyond, right? He is beyond these things, so therefore they can't be understood. That's the whole point. That's what Vishnu Chakravarti was pointing out. Is you're trying to figure out the Lord's pastimes with your intelligence, but if they are spiritual, this means just for logic's sake, right? Just say, what if they are spiritual? Okay, but the problem is the intelligence is material,
yes,
and the mind's material, so you wouldn't be able to perceive them anyway, right?
Yes.
So it's impossible to be able, because you have to have an instrument that has the similar matching qualities of what you're trying to measure. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You know, if it doesn't have something common, you can't measure it, right? So therefore, then. There is no way with your intelligence you can do. Now, also, continuing the same line, if it is spiritual, that means it's beyond. And spirit has nothing to do with material, right? So now Mayavadis will buy that, no problem, right? Because it has to be different. So now if it is different, there's no, and spiritual being superior, there's no need for superior to deal with the inferior, right? You know what I'm saying? It's not that the adults sitting at the dining table with everything formal dinner have to worry about what goes on in the backyard with the kids eating mud. It's not like they have to have it. There's no need for an interface. There's no need to discuss it. It just doesn't come up. I mean, think about it. Any dinner you've been at with any adults has ever come up in the conversation the need to acknowledge and interact, with kids who are eating mud? Never. It never happens. You know, the mom may go out in the backyard and say, why are you eating mud? You know, that's another thing. But that's when you've gone there. So in other words, why would the mother be going there? Why would the Supreme come into the material unless it's out of compassion? And so therefore, it's with compassion. Therefore, there must be that surrender. And when that surrender is there, then that compassion is applied. That mercy is given. Then you can understand. So it's logical. It's not sentiment,
yes.
Because sentiment can only be applied within the senses and the mind, and that kind of intelligence. So they're just taking it that you're not distinguishing between matter and spirit. But actually, in fact, yes, the common person is not, but at the same time, neither is the jnani. They think they are, but just, they have a different sentiment. That's all. They're also just as much sentimentalist as the karmi. Just their sentiments in a different area.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
The classical musician, he listens to one music, then there's somebody else listening to, what he would call, noise. Does that make sense? But the point is, does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's the whole thing, is that it's within your realm, you have to be able to apply it. But it's not that it's... So one's more refined, one's more intellectual, one's less intellectual. One's with more knowledge, one's with less. Does that make sense? But how does somebody appreciate some fine work or fine art? Someone has a nice Persian rug. How do you appreciate it? Without knowledge? I mean, everybody will go, ooh, that looks nice. But the more you know, the more you appreciate. So it's not that that removes. They're thinking that intelligence removes the sentiment. No, it just adjusts it to a more refined level. So the jnani is more refined than the karmi. You know, in this way of their sentiment.
Yes.
But they're no less sentimental because it's illusion. While the devotees, it's not sentiment because that's the actual nature of the living entity to serve God. And the Lord's natural reciprocation. Does this make sense? He who is devoid of bhakti, the jnani, says that any object with the name and with the name and form is illusion. And he says that with name and form. Right? So what he's talking about is illusion. So the point is if it's illusion, yes, but also his concept, because he's seeing some form and he's speaking about it. He's also an illusion. And if you pull him up on it, they have to agree, yes. And if it is, then why are you speaking? What's the point? It doesn't matter. If it's all illusion, what does it matter, this illusion or that illusion? It's all illusion. You know what I'm saying? You know, you have two madmen in the insane asylum. You know, one seeing monsters and that, and the other one thinks he's Napoleon Bonaparte. What's the difference? You know? Okay, medication might be slightly different. You know? You know, this one gets a blue pill, that one gets a pink one. But it's going to be the same. It's still illusion. You know. So therefore now, isn't it illusion saying your illusion is better than, my illusion is better than your illusion? You know, isn't that, that's a bit immature. Right? So therefore, there's no way talking about it, nothing you can do. So it's a matter of giving you the idea. But the point is even giving you the idea, you're working with a mundane mind. So what actually makes the system work? That's where they can't explain. That's the problem with impersonalism. They can only bring you near. They can never actually. In other words, all they have is anuman. All they have is, there's this, there's that, and so it should be this. There's always the guesswork. They never actually have anything solid. It's not something you can perceive. We can perceive it. That's it, because of the faith of the Lord, shabda can be perceived. Right? But they can't. Yes.
But why do they have the concept of guru and then they follow guru and then kick away the ladder at the end? You know,
yeah, because they, you know, then they become God. That's the whole thing, they want to become God. But the point is that concept that I am God, Brahman doesn't think I am God. Because that means you have to have a mind, you have to be thinking. So in other words, you know, basically kind of like what they're professing is that you become a little like a potato. You know?
Maybe closer to home.
Like that. Yeah. So that's the problem. You know, just I'm a bigger potato than the other potatoes, right? Because they're karmi potatoes and I am Vermont potatoes. You know, so I'm a better quality potato, right? But, yes.
So everything is depending on the intention.
Yes. Yes. So the thing is I'm just, yes, it's intention, is that you want to please the Lord, then that'll work. You want to just, you know, that impersonal or the karma, that's the actual what you're dealing with. So it's desire that's the real thing that makes it work. That's what's going to come up. You realize this Bhagavan because you desire to please the Lord. That's the only way. Like that, somebody says. But the point we're making there is you'll see all of these impersonal paths. They never can tell you what is the absolute or how to get it. They can only kind of bring you near it. Right? You know, they'll talk about it. You sit and you meditate and, you know, and then there'll be a, you know, there'll be a peacefulness and you feel that. And, you know, in other words, they can't tell you, you know. That's it. You know, the yoga things and all that kind of Western New Agey, they do like that. You know, and you know, the Chinese were the best, you know, the door of no door.
Yes.
Like that. Well, what does that mean? You know, because you can't actually explain it, because all they can do is bring you near it, and then if you deal with it, then you'll figure it out. And then when I say the door of no door, and you all, and I, how I feel, and I can see that you kind of have, then we can bond, because there's a similar thing, but who knows if they're actually feeling the same thing. Does that make sense?
Yes.
But that's the whole thing, is they can't define, but here we see the acharyas define very exactly and clearly. So then one would also, if one's actually intellectual, one would figure out this is a more defined and conclusive definition than anything that they have. Because we saw those 2 days the other day, you know, going to the Tetrasandarbha. That was predominantly quoting from these kind of people. And it's like you're going through page after page of stuff, and it doesn't say anything, though it is so intellectual. Intellectual beyond anything you'll hear in any modern, you know, contemporary situation. Then picking words apart and why do you understand the word? Right? I'm saying a sentence, but until the whole sentence is said, how do you understand what it is? So what actually makes it that sentence makes you understand? Who thinks about that? But these guys are thinking about it. No, it's that each word has a potency. No, it's actually the last word that then finishes things at all. You know, they argue over stuff like this.
Yes.
That's smart, but that's misapplied intelligence. That's foolish, because why would you spend your time? It's just like, let's say the guy goes into this big, fancy, you know, mansion, and he wants to know what, why it's there, its origin. So he goes over to one of the tables, you know, very carefully, you know, with his gloves on, and he's got his little, you know, his little tweezers and his little bottle and his cork, and, you know, takes a little fleck off the table and puts it into his jar, takes it back to his laboratory, puts it under his ion microscope, and, you know, 100,000 times, you know, making it bigger, you know, magnification. Then he's, from that, is going to figure out actually why that mansion's there, what happens in that mansion and everything. That's your quantumist. Right? So now, that's smart, right? But that's a fool. Why would you use that as a method? Whoever said that method works. You know, so they say, okay, they're cool with it. You did that, you know, and I did that. You know, I got my white rat, you got your white rat, you know. So then, you know, we do our things, and if your white rat do what my white rat is, now that's science. You know. But if that's the case, you know, every street of the world the dog barks, and on another street of the world the dog barks. So is that science or what? You know, what's going on? Yeah, so. Okay. That notion is indicated by the word Kumanisha, person with bad intelligence. The Lord broadcasts Santan Vata. These names and forms when he repeatedly appears in the world by his mercy. An example of ignorance is given. The person ignorant of drama cannot understand the names and forms indicated by the actor through theatrical gestures of the hands and poetic words indicating the moon or the lotus. I know we're talking about more refined drama here.
Yes.
Right? That we're not talking about like Peer Gynt or something, right? Thus, he does not appreciate the drama and says there is no rasa. Right? And everybody else is saying he's a cretin, right? The person in knowledge directly experiences the rasa, which pervades all the senses and heart.
Sita was Guru's brother?
What's brother? For a while I thought she was the uncle, but, you know, she was a lady. Okay. He can't understand what's going on, even though it's going on in front of him, because he doesn't have the information. And as we pointed out, for the jnani, there's no way to get the information, so he can't educate himself by his method. That's the whole point. The guy's grown up on the street, knows the things of the street, but what does he have for knowing the refined elements of culture? You know, in the fine arts and that. He doesn't have, through his method, a way of understanding it. You know what I'm saying? You know, other than, you know, very, how you say, absolute rules, like when you're using this spray can, don't make round. It has to have a point. It has to be zigzag. That's the only thing. Because, you know, your arm doesn't, you know, it's better like that. Yeah, so it's other than that. That means, but how will he understand what's going on? What's the person doing? He can't. He doesn't have an access. So the Mayavadi has no access because he's working with his material senses and intelligence, and so he can't understand. So it's only through the mercy of the devotees and the Lord then you can understand. That's it. There is no other method. So that's the point in these verses. Only those who can render unreserved, uninterrupted, favorable service unto the lotus feet of Krishna who carries the wheel of the chariot in his hand, can know the creator of the universe in his full glory, power, and transcendence. Right? Nice sentence, right?
Yes.
Everything in here. Rendered unreserved means it's not a matter of there's something for yourself or when I like to. Uninterrupted, it has to be constant. We saw that taste only comes once there's consistency. Right? Favorable means that you may be unreserved and uninterrupted, but you may have a purpose for yourself. Right? Like that. Yeah. Then it has meaning. Right? And who carries the wheel, the chariot in his hand. Right? He's doing that to protect the devotee. So the point is that surrender to that person who is surrendered to his devotees. That's where the real rasa can be appreciated. Otherwise, just he's great, he's God, he's supreme, he's controlling, he's like that. So in other words, that surrender to Bhagavan as a person in his pastimes with the devotees. As we can see, is that Bhagavatam's emphasizing this point that he has a form and he's the supreme and you accept him and he's God isn't enough. Because otherwise that's also accomplished on the platform of Paramatma realization. The Bhagavan means the interaction with the devotees. And that interaction is based on affection, not on his being God. But even in Vaikuntha, it's based on affection, but it's master-servant. Right? But generally we just think it's just God and that power and that. No, that's Paramatma. Bhagavan, that's not the point. So it's a different category. That's why Bhagavatam stands out. Yes. Right? The others, well, as long as it's connected to the Lord, that's there. They talk about Bhagavan. But if you're working at a lower level, you're still connected. The Bhagavatam's making the point, we're not going to deal with those lower levels. We're only going to deal with this, what did he say? Unreserved, uninterrupted, favorable service under the lotus feet of Krishna. That's what Bhagavatam's doing. So in other words, what is this uniqueness of this Bhagavan teacher? How to bring that out? So that's what's coming out in Bhagavatam. When you fully appreciate that, then 10th canto, you'll get the proper taste. Otherwise, you know, more nice stories. You know, the devotees are hearing that, and then, oh, hey, let's hear this, you know, story of Tulsi and Shaligram and the Brahmanda Purana is totally in the mode of passion, and then get completely confused about how this can happen, and how there's jealousy, how there's all, you know, then that's why you're not supposed to be involved. Right? But why would you go from one to the other? That means you're not getting that much taste out of it. You're getting taste, but not as much as you could. Otherwise, why would you do that? Okay, in his full glory, power, and transcendence. Only by making such inquiries in this world can one be successful and perfectly cognizant. For such inquiries invoke transcendental ecstatic love under the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the proprietor of all the universes, and guarantee 100% immunity from the dreadful repetition of birth and death. 37-39. Right, so it's giving very exact what has to be there. Right? So only through that devotional service on the Supreme Lord, that kind of inquiry and discussion, that will get you out of the material world and you'll never be involved in it again. So the Sutta Goswami glorifies the sage's questions because they invoke transcendental ecstatic love under the personality of Godhead. So that was, they asked the question how to, you know, so that's glorious because that's actually the purpose. The Bhagavatam. Right. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the sages ask, O Sutta, what novel scripture, unheard of before this time, are you reciting? Sutta Goswami replies in the next section of verses. That's nice. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is always, many times, reveals the unspoken, or it's not even unspoken, the unheard aspect of the question. Yes.
I have a question about that. Like when you read Guru John Prabhu's Surrender Unto Me Study Guide, and he's drawing on Vishwanath and Baladev, it almost sounds like what we know as the Gita is just the highlights, because there's so much going on in between the verses, within the verses. Is it like Krishna actually said all those things, or is this Vishwanath's ecstasy?
No, it's all, these are said. But we have to remember is what's being documented. Vyasadeva is documenting.
Right.
It's just like, it's not that Markandeya Rishi speaking to Vidura, right? It's not that it's necessarily that was all the conversation. It may have been, but there could have been so much more. But according to the question asked, that was all that was relevant to be documented there by Sukadeva to Pritikin.
So the Gita is the recorded Gita.
It's the recorded Gita. So there may be more, yes. But it's not that would be a position taken, that more is there and there's only this has been revealed. No, he's revealed how much is necessary in the light of the position of the Gita in the Mahabharata, to give the essence, like that. Now, the Acharyas bring out more there if someone's doing a serious study, because the person who's hearing Gita in the Mahabharata, it's not necessarily that association is about serious study of Gita. Right? So therefore, it's not necessary to reveal it there. So in other words, for the audience, how it's given, that's perfect. And the thing is it's not that whatever Vishwanath and Baladeva are revealing aren't already contained in what's there. It's just that one needs more understanding to be able to appreciate that. You know, just like,
it's like when you give class. I always tell people, now you have to be patient with Bhaktivedanta Purnamarshi. He knows what he's talking about, but he's churning it. And he'll revisit those points, and then you'll catch it if you just be patient. Because I can see when you give class, you know what you're saying, and then finally it sort of comes clear to me when you churn it and you make it, you really clarify it. It's all implied, you know, the first time around, but then you unpack it more and more.
Yeah.
It's great. But a lot of people, they leave after the first turn because they can't get it.
Yeah, no.
Be patient.
Yeah. Most who come to the class and who have eventually stayed. I mean, we've had people that say that the first time they came and stayed for weeks or months, they didn't understand anything. But when they came back the second time, then it started to make sense. So it seems to take a while.
Need time more to digest.
Yeah, something. I don't know. Because the Acharyas, when everything gets is, means this, like Lord Chaitanya says, everything can be condensed down to, you know, the jiva is the eternal servant of God. Krishna is the master. We're the servant, and service is a natural inclination. That service being applied through devotional service, you know, to please, and the point is to please the Lord in love of God. That is, all the philosophy can be condensed down into that. Therefore, it's from any of that, you can go out to any of the others. So that's the difficulty. So if you want to get from one to the other, you have to go through this to make the connection. And then that's the difficulty. Okay. So you understand what I'm saying? So it shouldn't create this idea that we got cheated, we didn't get the whole thing, and this is revealed. This is a matter of that deeper study, then they're revealing more of what is, even if it wasn't spoken, it's implied.
Yes.
You know, like that. You know, it's just like, let's just say, there's a group of people and you say, so? And I say, yeah, the regular place. You know, so we know what we're talking about, but no one else knows. And what does that regular place mean? And then what goes on there and how the dress and the mood and all those kind of things is implied. So therefore, the Acharyas can catch those things, but the essence is where you want to start from, because the Vedic always starts from the essence and goes out. The modernists start from out, and then supposedly when you do your postgraduate, you'll get to the essence. But before postgraduate, don't even bother even considering that there's essence going to be spoken.
Right, but postgraduate is finally where they admit we don't know anything.
What to do? You're not an academic till you're a postgraduate. Then, because you are, now you can be honest and say, you don't know what we're talking about. Don't let the kids know. Because right? If the kids know, we're out of a job.
Right?
They're not going to pay $30,000 a year if we don't know what we're talking about. You know, hey. Yeah. Okay, so, O Sutta, what novel scripture unheard before this time are you reciting? Because never before has the scripture exclusively only talked about pure devotion. Now, Narad Muni, it's been stated that he went through the Vedic literatures, the Vedas, and from it extracted pure devotion. And then he speaks that. So the Narada Bhakti Sutras, the Pancharatra, these things are talking in that direct, that line. But they've never heard where it exclusively just talks like this. No scripture does that. Like that. You have to be able to find it. It may be a little bit more direct, like Upanishads are more direct. Brahmanas will be very indirect. So indirect that, you know, Jaimini has been lost there for a long time. Right? So that's the thing, is that that directness, the Bhagavatam, even Gita is not so direct. But we're not used to that directness. So we don't even look for it. Like that. But they're saying, they're able to catch it. What is this novel scripture? Right. Verses 40 to 44, glorification of Bhagavatam. In this section, Srila Sutta Goswami answers the sixth question of the sages. Where have religious principles gone after Krishna's departure from this planet? In answer, Sutta Goswami glorifies the Srimad Bhagavatam as the incarnation of Lord Krishna, meant for delivering the conditioned souls of Kali Yuga. He also describes how the Bhagavatam was transferred from Srila Vyasadeva to Sukadeva and to himself. Right? So that's your Pratigya. This Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of God, and it is compiled by Srila Vyasadeva, the incarnation of God. Right? And as Ben pointed out, the Acharyas are making the point is that it's not specifically that he is a Shaktivesh. There's the point. Vyasadeva can be Shaktivesh, but he also can be directly the Lord himself. Right? Like that. Like the next, you know, up and coming with Ashwatthama, he'll be Shaktivesh. Right? But this Vyasadeva, then it's not specifically defined. I think I've heard both, yes.
I found in Lagu Bhagavataritas, one sage was performing severe austerities. He entered to the body of Vyasadeva today, together with the Lord.
With the Lord. Okay, so they're both together. Okay. So then how much that means, is it just Shaktivesh, or is it actually the Lord himself personally performing the pastimes? Because I've heard the description both ways, and both are not, it's not contested. But the point is that it can be, either way, with Vyas.
So Vyas and him in a post?
Yes, it's a post. All these are post. Jaimini's a post, Gotama's a post. Like that. So they're all there. Because every Kali Yuga, when they're documented, there'll be a Jaimini. Like that. So that's why the Vedas can refer to, like Indra. Like generally it's very rare you ever hear Indra's name. But Indra actually has a, like Vyas, Krishna Dwaipayana, that's his name. Then he's Vyas. So Indra actually has a name. So now and again you heard it. Or Sutta, you have Roma Harshana Sutta, or Vidhi Prabha Sutta. So they're actually posts, you know, that the scripture refers to. And so they're all doing basically the same thing, but they'll bring out a particular aspect in the pastime that will be specific for the question asked, like that. Otherwise, there's, you know, unlimited pastimes, but they're generally always in the same genre. You know, like Ram always goes to Lanka, like that. But in going, how he crosses the ocean is unique each time. This time he built a bridge. Other times he's done other things. So if you read the full, you know, Ramayana, then Jambavan explains other ways he got there in previous times. You know, because he's Chiranjeev, so he's there for every pastime. Like that. So this one, he's ecstatic. Oh, there's a new way to do it, you know? Like that. That's, therefore, when connected to the Lord, then it's unique in Navayovana, but other than that, as far as the material world goes, that's the meaning of chewing the chew. There is nothing new. It's always the same. You know? Right?
So there was our liberated soul, and he said, which parents? You know, I've had so many.
Yeah.
Let's make it clear for the liberated soul, this sutta.
Okay, this Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of God. and it is compiled by Srila Vyasadeva, the incarnation of God. It is meant for the ultimate good of all people, and it is all successful, all blissful, and all perfect. Sri Vyasadeva delivered it to his son, who is the most respected amongst the self-realized. After extracting the cream of all Vedic literatures and histories of the universe, right? So he's taking the essence like that from all of them. So the stories may be way bigger, like you see in different Puranas, like in the Bhagavatam, the description of the churning the ocean of milk is much bigger than, let's say, in the Nrsimha Purana. So each Purana, some Puranas will give more detail, but there's details that are different. But according to the question of the mood, then that's what's brought out. Right? So, yeah, and there, like, Bhagavatam brings out how the dependency on the Lord, and without the Lord it can't function. That comes out in the Bhagavatam. Well, in these other ones, you just hear the story, the chronology of it. You may catch that, but you might not. But Bhagavatam emphasizes to make sure you do. Like that. Sukadeva Goswami, the son of Vyasadeva, in his turn delivered the Bhagavatam to the emperor Pariksit, who sat surrounded by sages on the bank of the Ganges, awaiting death without taking food or drink. This Bhagavat Purana is as brilliant as the sun, and it has arisen just after the departure of Lord Krishna to his own abode, accompanied by religion, knowledge, etc. Persons who have lost their vision due to the dense darkness of ignorance in the age of Kali shall get light from this Purana, O learned Brahmins. I mentioned before this religion, knowledge, the Lord, they went with him. But the point is, Bhagavatam being the Lord, then they're also there present again. So the point is, this religion, knowledge is required. But if the Lord goes, they're his qualities. They're not qualities of the material world. They go with him. But the Bhagavatam being here is the incarnation of the Lord. Therefore, being the Lord, knowledge, religion, everything is here with him. So therefore, then there's no shortcoming. O learned Brahmanas, when Sukadeva Goswami recited Bhagavatam there in the presence of Emperor Pariksit, I heard him with rapt attention, and thus, by his mercy, I learned the Bhagavatam from that great and powerful sage. So he's heard it, but it's still by the mercy, because hearing is one thing, as we mentioned. That's why the discussions come up. Why do you understand? Because the material ear, the material sound vibration through the material ether with the material tongue, you know, entering the material mind, like that has to be digested. How does this work? All these syllables, that, you know, all these, how does that function? So it's by the mercy that potency is there. That's why that most potency is not there with the non-devotees. That's why they're saying there's some potency, but they can only catch that potency, the reflected aspect of the material potency. What was that? What was the svota? Right, that slow potency is there. But the point is that svota is coming from the potency of the chit potency. Mm-hmm. Right? So in other words, the spiritual aspect is lacking, only the material aspect of chit or knowledge is there. Therefore it has function. But the original form is the Lord. Therefore, the words are non-different from the Lord. That's why they have potency. But here in the material world, the words are different. Yes. But the Lord, his energy enters them, therefore it functions. Right? So without the mercy, then you're only dealing with the reflected aspect. Right? And so then one will think, I am the, what do you call it? Efficient cause, right? I heard it with rapt attention. And therefore, I have it. But he's pointing out, it's not that. I heard with rapt attention, that was my service. Then pleasing Sukadeva, he gave blessings. Therefore, I understood it. Right? Because otherwise, then we always put ourselves as the efficient cause, but Krishna's the efficient cause. Right? Therefore, he's the efficient cause. We're the operative cause. Right? It means we're involved in it. So we're assistants. We're instrumental. We're not actually the subject. Right? We think I'm the subject. Therefore, I'm the cause, but we're actually the instrument connected with the verb. We're not the subject at all.
Yes. Could we say that the neophyte devotee thinks they're the object, and the Majjhama devotee knows he's the instrument?
The general tendency is to think you are the subject. Unless, yes, of course, you've been wrong, then of course you're the object.
Yeah.
Right? But never you're the, you know, the instrument. Because if you're the instrument, it means the other guy is also the instrument.
Yeah.
So you weren't the object at all. Right? You know, it's just this is what's happening with the modes of nature. They were driving their truck, you just happened to be, you know, in their way. You know, it's not that I'm pointing my gun at you. You just happen to be standing where I'm pointing.
Sure, I'm pointing it. Yeah.
Efficient means essential.
Efficient means who is actually accomplished, who's making it happen, or who's starting it. Because it means just like if you don't push the button on the machine doesn't work. So you're the efficient cause, but the machine is the material cause because it actually makes it happen. We never actually make something happen. We just start. It's a catalyst that then starts a process of material energy transforms. So, but that potency that we're even using as the instrument here or the operational is actually coming from the Lord. Because it's the Lord's potencies that make it work. So it's the potency of the internal transferring to the external that's actually making it work. So the forms that you follow the rules of the forms and activities that the internal potency is defined will accomplish this activity. It's supposed to be for the Lord's pleasure. That reflected in the material world, you follow that, you'll get the result, though you won't get any pleasure out of it, unless it's connected to the Lord. You know, it is an option for pleasure, but you'll only get pleasure when you connect to the Lord. That's why pleasure in the material is defined as gaining what you wanted. Not that you experience any pleasure. You don't experience pleasure from the object. You experience pleasure getting the object. That's why there is no happiness in the material world. But in the spiritual world, that's why it says that all living entities are tasty. Right? Because actually there is rasa in dealing with everybody. But here it's not. It's just that if they do this, like people are interacting, but then you go away and say, that wasn't nice. Someone else says, it was great. Because the one, I was expecting them to do this and they didn't do it. The other one wasn't expecting that. They just wanted to interact. They got their interaction. They thought it was great. You know? So it's attaining situations that you want, you call it happiness. But the actual happiness, ananda, is not tasted in the material world. It can't. It's just there isn't. Because ananda comes from the Lord. Lord is ananda. He's rasa. And so that's blocked in the reflection. Right? The reflection is there of the internal potency of the Lord that reflects into the world as us as the Lord and the material energy is the internal potency. But the point is we're not the Lord. So it doesn't have that. The energy works. So that's why it works. The Lord is the efficient because his energy goes through. But the thing is our claiming, you know, the position, you know, we get the credit because we say, I'm doing it. Therefore, by karma, you get the credit or discredit, depending upon if it was pious or not, or recommended or not. And the material energy transforms as it's supposed to, as is defined by the internal potency. Because they're the same person.
Whether it's acting materially or spiritually is depending on our desire, how the Lord's reciprocating.
That's how you're viewing it. How you're viewing it, dealing with the Lord, therefore he's reciprocating. Mm-hmm. So if you're dealing with the Lord, then the chit potency acts as yoga maya. You're not dealing with the Lord, the chit potency acts as the mahamaya. But mechanics are the same. Mm-hmm. That's what we're trying to say as devotees. Everyone has this idea that spiritual mechanics are one thing, material mechanics are another. So if I want to be successful in material, just the ordinary practical sphere, I have to use material mechanics. But no, there's only spiritual mechanics. There isn't something else. It's the laws of God. People are successful in the world because they follow the laws of God. That's all. You don't follow. But people take that and analyze it just like, you know, there are, you know, scientists. Or like the impersonalist, they analyze it down to this point. But they're analyzing the wrong aspect. And so therefore, nobody from that knowledge actually is successful. Successful people is they've done the karma, and the karma just comes to them. If you ask them, they'll say, well, you're doing this, this, this. But how do you deal with that? It's the spirit in which you deal. It's how you view it, how you deal in the moment, how you see all that. That's the laws of nature. But that nobody can explain. You know, they think it's some trick, some technique. That's why technique is given, but it's not actually technique that makes it work. It's attitude. So Bhagavatam is all about the attitude. The other scriptures will mention it, but they mainly give you technique. That's why this book is so unique, because never before is it only on the attitude, because it's all like the introduction to Gita. The first thing Prabhupada brings out is the spirit. Because in Sambandha, if you don't know the spirit, you won't know how to deal with the other mechanics. Because that knowledge is what you're going to apply in Abhideya. But you don't have this right spirit, it won't work. Because it's not about, well, I did it. It's not like Jaimini says, I did the work, God has to reciprocate. No, it means part of the work is the attitude. You had the wrong attitude, he doesn't have to reciprocate.
But they can't measure attitude, so they dismiss it?
Basically, it means it's known that it's there, but they only see it from be enthusiastic or be focused or be. They come up with these other terms, but they don't catch that there's a mood. So you know, you means you must be committed, but then that commitment is expressed through attitude. And the problem is then if you have a group of people where being focused is attitude, then they work fine. But as soon as they leave that boardroom, get on the plane, fly to another country, no one in any other boardroom likes them. Because their attitude is totally wrong. So that's the whole point. It works in their environment. Right? And unfortunately, because people are using their forms, then somehow or another it's thought that therefore our attitude and our perspective is also the one for the world. It's the international. No, it's not. It's very, very, very localized. You can use that attitude in certain circles in New York, up in Chicago, down there in L.A. The rest of it, you can't use it. There is no other place you can use it. You go out into the countryside there, the guy's got his big ranch, he's successful, you use that attitude, he'll blow your head off. Like that. And he's got a shotgun, and you're on his land, and he can do it. You know? And so it just doesn't work. But there's ideas that, no, this is for the world. Therefore, all the trouble. And it's all the trouble is about attitude. It's not about the facts. Because facts aren't even known. They don't even know the facts. Where's the shloka? Well, if you don't, well, where's your shloka? You got to give a shloka. Otherwise, why should I accept it? I got to follow the Veda. Well, where's your shloka to say you don't have to? You know? Because Manu, we have a shloka. Manu says you don't follow the Vedic, it's modern. He uses that term millions of years ago. Modern means not Vedic.
So,
I'm not sure the Sanskrit, but it just means it's modern. Because modern means what's right happening now and is changing. So if it's not based in the Shastra, it's always changing. So nature is not modern, because it's always the same. You know, and it's eternal, and it's still there, and it still works. So therefore the Vedas also. But modern man thinks, no, Vedas don't apply now because it's ancient. We're up to date. No, you're not. You're just living in the moment. The next moment's different. Whatever you did in the last moment doesn't work in this moment. Like that. So that concept's always been there. So we have a shloka, but they don't have a shloka. But we have to give a shloka. You know, to tell them that, you know, you have to do this. So it's not good. So that's the point, because using material intelligence, the chit potency doesn't come through. So if someone can't understand it, it's because the chit potency is not connected. If they're using all intelligence and logic. If they're not, then it means use your intelligence. You know how Prabhupada is shown. Then you understand. But if you're not through material intelligence, you can't. There is no way. But there's this idea, no, I can do. And where is it coming from? From the modern academy. Right? Previously, anybody who would say, you know, we don't have to follow, it would be, you're in mind. But nowadays, no, they have a stand. Why? Because of the modern academy. Because the modern academy can say, you know, why? You know, we have to look at it, you know, we have to critically and analyze this.
Objectively.
Yeah, objectively. And so based on their authority, it's being used. But otherwise, within the movement, it's never had. And they themselves, you know, people pointed out, they don't know what they're talking about. But, you know, they'll only discuss that amongst others who they consider are part of the academy.
After a few years. Huh? After a few beers.
Yeah, or even over a few beers. What else are you talking about? Yes. Okay.
Mark, so yes. Attitude means for the pleasure of the Lord?
It has to be. But it means it's for the pleasure. It means that's the principle. Now, what form the attitude will take will change from situation to situation. Because the point is as the situation changes, then what has to be done to please the Lord changes. But the principle of pleading the Lord with the right attitude, right understanding, right endeavor, you know, that's consistent. That never changes. But the detail will change according to time, place, and circumstance. So it's true, time, place, and circumstance is important. Because to accomplish something, you require a verb. Verb defines time, place, and circumstance. Right? So that's the whole thing. In the verb, it's the mood. If you have the wrong mood, how will the action work?
Is that soft eating? And then, but make sure it's not just soft?
Yeah, yeah, like that. Because preaching that works is soft preaching. The acharyas use it, everything. You see the attitude, how they do it. But it's not that it's not factual. Idea of soft preaching is don't tell the facts. No. Actual soft preaching is tell the facts in a cultured way, in a palatable way. That's soft preaching. But that's just preaching. We wouldn't use the term soft. So in other words, soft preaching has come up as a term for those who are insensitive in implying the facts according to the audience. So they'll say that's hard preaching. No, that's not preaching. You know, preaching is preaching. Like that. So yes, you can say there's hard and there's soft, but when there's duality, we're talking mundane. So the hard is wrong, the soft is wrong. Preaching, that's what it's supposed to be. You know, it's real, because you're saying the facts, right, in a way. Bhagavatam opens with that. That's for shloka. You know, discerning knowledge from illusion, you know, reality from illusion for the benefit of all. So that all will mean who you're dealing with. One is for everybody, but the situation you're in is for that all. But if you're not discerning illusion from reality, then what is the preaching? What are you doing? You're just making it feel good. How does that, you know, like that? It's like, and are we that good? You know, how many people come to our studio? I mean, how many people go to these other studios? Yes. There's yogis, they draw thousands.
Yes.
Like that. Now, that's good. They know how to make people feel good. Right? You know, the way they talk, their voice, just their voice is good. It's just like nectar. You know, it's like Venus is right there. You know. Right, it's just like, it just comes out like nectar, and they're educated, and they know the words, and they know psychology and people, and they're watching the signs, and they're good, right? Like that. So, yeah, but if you're not that good, but if it's not, then why bother? Like that. Because they're all, you know, if it's about, no, but then if we don't talk that way, they'll go away. But what's the use of keeping them? You can't even say you got a lot of, I got 10,000 people coming to my program. You know, you fill up a stadium? There's guys that fill up stadiums. Like that, you know. Then you can say, okay, well, I got 25,000 people coming, you know. Inside. But the point is we're looking for one. You know, Prabhupada, Bhakti, Siddhanta, Saraswati Thakur both made the statement, if by all the work I've done in that whole life, shedding, you know, gallons of blood, if one person becomes a pure devotee, it's all worth it.
Yes.
But we're thinking, no, it's by numbers. And who is numbers important to? You say it's bourgeois.
Yes.
So it's an economic thing. Yes. It's arta. It's not dharma or bhakti.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Middle of 74. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary on 1343. What more can be said? You ask where Dharma has taken shelter. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.23. Please understand the answer now. Krishna, having departed from his abode, Dwarka, Svadhama, arrived at Upagate, Prabhasa, and then disappeared along with his six powers, such as Dharma and Jnana. The details are not mentioned clearly because the pastime of Krishna's disappearance causes disturbance to the devotee. Nasta drishtam refers to persons who have lost knowledge. The word drik, sight, suggests a verse at the end of the 11th canto. Just as on a moonless night, people are merged into darkness and cannot find their way, Now that I have lost sight of your lotus feet, my lord, I have lost my vision and am wandering blindly in darkness. I cannot tell my direction, nor can I find any peace. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:30-43. From that, the following inference can be made. Krishna is the sun, and Mathura is like the sunrise mountain. Prabhas is the sunset mountain. The righteous persons are like Chakravaka birds, which mourn in the night and rejoice in the day. The evil persons are like fog. Darkness is the totality of sins. The devotees are like a grove of lotuses. Krishna is clearly compared to the sun in the following verse. Because right? The lotuses, when they thrive in the sun, right? Well, then the others that they don't, right? So the fog is evil persons are like fog. So fog is there, they'll bother people at night and that, but as soon as the sun comes up, the fog is dispersed. Okay. Following verse. Okay. My dear Vidura, the son of the world, Lord Krishna, has set. And our house has now been swallowed by the great snake of time. What can I say to you about our welfare? Srimad Bhagavatam 3:227. Though the sun of Krishna has set, the sun of the Bhagavat Purana has risen. A form corresponding to the sun becomes the sun. So one doesn't have to worry. Because now again, the sun is up, and then you know the Chakravaka birds, the devotees will be happy, right? The fog will be dispersed, and you know everything will go. Nice.
The other day, those who were in the thick fog, they were compared to like the scholars.
Yeah. It's like, here he's even saying that they are the fog. they fog up everybody's vision. Yeah, you go out, walk outside, then you can go. Yeah, all these evil persons all over my glass. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to 1344. One can certainly see directly the presence of Lord Sri Krishna in the pages of Bhagavatam if one has heard it from a self-realized great soul like Sukadeva Goswami. So here's self-realized great soul. So it's even more. Because, I mean, so many are self-realized, but self-realized meaning that they're great amongst the self-realized. And yes?
Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita then, soul surrendered unto him is a great soul.
Yes, anybody surrendered. It means the neophyte is a great soul. But, he, you know, like that. So here is the self-realized great soul. You know, so one has come to that topmost platform. Does that sound like something? Okay. One cannot, however, learn Bhagavatam from a bogus hired reciter whose aim of life is to earn some money out of such recitation and employ the earning in sex indulgence. No one can learn Srimad Bhagavatam who is associated with persons engaged in sex life. That is the secret of learning Bhagavatam. Nor can one learn Bhagavatam from one who interprets the text by his mundane scholarship. But in other words, someone is absorbed in enjoying the senses, or someone is absorbed in mundane scholarship. Either one, you can't actually understand Bhagavatam, because devotional service means you're engaging the senses, you're engaging the intelligence in the Lord's service. Because from the position of Shankya, intelligence and the senses are coming from the same place. Right? They're both coming from the mode of passion. Yes. Right? Because the senses are operated by the intelligence. Yes. Now, what they're operated for, that's the mind. So, therefore, the mind is given as the lord of the senses. But also intelligence is lord of the senses, because your sense only functions because it's able to discriminate. That's what a sense does, discriminates between one thing and another. So it's intelligence. So therefore it's not that it's two different things, or why this and not that, or why that and not, you know, why one and why this one, but that one I can, you know, doesn't match. No, they both match. Because trying to enjoy the senses and trying to analyze things is the same thing. So if they're not connected, so therefore the karma and the jnani are one thing, yes. Just two aspects of one thing, the materialist.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's why we don't ultimately make so much distinction.
Yes. And the yogi?
Yogi is another karma.
Yes.
Because how many of them are working on that kind of more intellectual, analytical? They are, they may have that jnana aspect, but the whole thing in the body, the yoga asanas, the breathing and all that's all physical. It's also, they're counted as a branch of karma, yoga. Because most of them, they want siddhis and other things like that, you know, health, peace of mind. So that's all karma. They're just using a subtle form to get it. Right? But if they want to merge into the Lord, then it has that aspect of yant. It's one or the other. It's not that it's unique. It's just that it engages the mind more. While the other is more on the senses, more on the intelligence. This is the secret of learning Bhagavatam. Nor can one learn Bhagavatam from one who interprets the text by his mundane scholarship. One has to learn Bhagavatam from the representative of Sukadeva Goswami. Right, so even if they don't have those other two problems, they're not interested in Brahman, and they're not interested in enjoying the senses, but they're interested in using mundane scholarship to interpret. Right? I mean, that's what goes on nowadays. Is people, as we said before, based on their confidence of the seeming authority of the modern academy, then they'll use their mundane scholarship to try to analyze the Vedic literatures, and naturally 2 plus 2 equals 47. So it doesn't work out for them. Well, actually, I shouldn't say 47, because 47 is 9, is transcendental, so say, you know, 53.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah? One has to learn Bhagavatam from the representative Sukadeva Goswami and no one else. If one at all wants to see Lord Sri Krishna in the pages, if you want to see that it's non-different from Krishna, then you have to hear it in Parampara. That is the process, and there's no alternative. Right? So it's not that it's one way to do it. No, Bhagavatam is that this is it. That Gita gives you so many ways you can engage the conditioning.
Yes.
You know, so that the karma, yoga, jnana, yoga, dhyana, yoga, like this, all these aspects are you start the process. But Bhagavatam is saying that it's only bhakti can do it. So in other words, whatever process you're using, if it's not done in devotion, then it won't get you Krishna. Yes. Yes.
So this is the most direct scripture there is?
Yes. You could say that. That's why he says it's novel. It's unique. Sutta Goswami is a bona fide representative of Sukadeva Goswami because he wants to present the message which he received from the great learned Brahmana. Sukadeva Goswami presented Bhagavatam as he heard it from his great father. And so also Sutta Goswami is presenting Bhagavatam as he heard it from Sukadeva Goswami. Notice here also he's great in both of them, the great Brahman and his great father. So then you're also indicating that they're all devotees.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Not just a Brahmana, but a great Brahmana, a devotee. You know, and his father is not just a father, but a great father, a devotee. Simple hearing is not all. One must realize the text with proper attention. Right? Because it's not you just hear it, but it mentioned, he said, I heard it with rapt attention. Right? So that means then I was focused on it. Right? The word nivishta means that Sutta Goswami drank the juice of Bhagavatam through his ears. That is the real process of receiving Bhagavatam. One should hear with rapt attention from the real person, and then he can at once realize the presence of Lord Krishna in every page. So he's drinking the nectar. So he can see is that Krishna, since all his senses are interchangeable, then that connection with him, even that slightly rubs off on the devotee. That is the real process of receiving Bhagavatam. One should hear with rapt attention from the real person, and then he can at once realize the presence of Lord Krishna in every page. So real also, meaning is on the transcendental path, right? Coming in the Parampara. Because illusory is material, so real is spiritual.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, it doesn't mean that. Yeah. One should conjure up, you know, the ventriloquist with his doll. The secret of knowing Bhagavatam is mentioned here. no one can give rapt attention who is not pure in mind. And otherwise, you'll think of other things, you know, Veda, Vada, Rata. The mind just goes off.
Yes.
Right? No one can be pure in mind who is not pure in action. Right? Because what you do is what you value. Right? You're only going to do something if it gets you a result you want.
Yes.
Right? So the mind can't be pure if you're doing something that's not going to give a pure result.
Mm. Yes.
No one can be pure in action who is not pure in eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating.
Right?
Like that. Because then those are what's recommended. That's why they're controlled. That's why there's so much focus on them. The four regulative principles are to control those four. Because if those are controlled, then your action will be pure, then your mind will be pure.
Then you can hear.
Then you can hear, yes, that's the last one. And then you can hear with rapt attention, okay. Then hearing with rapt attention from the bona fide authority, then you'll realize Krishna in every page. So that's the value of it. Okay. But somehow or other, if someone hears with rapt attention from the right person, at the very beginning, one can assuredly see Lord Sri Krishna in person in the pages of the Bhagavatam. So now it's showing that if you hear at the beginning, then even if these others aren't in place, just by hearing, that making that endeavor, these others will come. So in other words, if they naturally come, it means you should just be doing them, because then you'll be able to see Krishna very quickly. If that's a difficulty, just by rapt hearing, then it will come. So if you're using any other method to know Krishna, it's not going to work. It has to be with rapt attention, not with a haisei. You put it all together. Objective, critical analysis. Right? It's not going to work. It can't work. It's impossible. So it has to be with rapt attention. That doesn't mean you're not using intelligence, because if you're hearing, then what's after hearing? What's after shravana?
Manana.
Then you contemplate it. That's where it happens. But if while you're hearing it, at that point you're analyzing whether it's that, then will you ever apply it? Because the point is, hear it, then contemplate and apply it. Right? Or, if you're contemplating, you should be contemplating how to apply it. Right? The doubt should come, I've heard this, the person spoke, I'm analyzing how to apply it, I don't see how it can apply. Then you ask a question. But if it's just a matter of whether I want to accept this or not, or you know what people think of me or not, or like this and that, that's not the ideal application. It is an application, of course, but it's an application based on false ego, false identity. That has to be based on I'm servant of Krishna, so what I've heard, how can I apply this in my life serving Krishna? These other things about, you know, oh, you don't have to do this or do that, that is in connection with my identity, what I want to do. So it's not going to work. That's why rapt attention then naturally bring the rest of it. But if it's not rapt, that's because the mind is distracted by other things. And generally that means impure action, impure eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And it's not that you have that, it's that you're attached to it. Having it, that's pretty standard. You're in the material world, generally this is, you know, that's why you can say this so generically.
Yes.
That everybody acts, and everybody has some connection with eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating. Right? Now, the question is what's the purity of that? Right? Depending on the modes, it'll be more pure, less pure, really less pure. No?
That's why it says, but somehow or other.
Yeah, that's the thing, is just somehow, you just have that interest, that desire, that's the qualification. Then, because of that, then the mercy of the guru, then one can do that. You know, so not it's not that by being pure in action and being pure in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, that's what causes you to understand Bhagavatam. It has to be the desire to hear. That's what we opened with, right?
Yes.
That shushu, what is it?
Shushu.
Shushu shro.
Shro.
Yeah. Or shushu shro ho, right? So Santa almost got it right. He used a few more syllables in front, right? Couldn't remember them, so he put another ho at the end. Okay? Does that make sense?
Yes.
So in other words, again, exactly showing what it is. It's the process of hearing from the bona fide devotees and wanting to know Krishna. That's what's going to make it work. That's the specialty. Why, of all the neophytes, the jnani is special. Because he wants to know the Lord.
Yes.
So therefore he's willing to hear.
Yes.
Right? The one wants just the problems go away, you know, the other wants the monetary, you know, emotional problems go away, the monetary problems, the other one is, I want to know something. So that looks interesting. You know, let's go check it out. So, fine to start that way, but at some point you should come to, I want to know the Lord. And that should come into the thing, is not just know him, but why know him? Because then you serve him, you please him, like that. So it should naturally move forward. Yes? Yes.
What happens if a person decides not to be in association with devotees and becomes more regulating his habits of eating and sleeping, and in this way is making an environment more conducive to understand the scriptures, but decide to be only on its own, on her own or his own?
It'll just be, it's not a strong position. It means you can say, the material arrangement is really good, but the spiritual is not. You know, where is that support? Like that. You know, that's all. But at the same time, even if they're doing that, if they're hearing, reading Prabhupada's books, hearing from the acharyas, then they're getting association. But at the same time, is that vichar, discussing it, and all those kind of things are important. They're all part of the process, because then you get inspired. But if you can't find anyone inspiring, there's no one on the planet who's inspiring, then, you know, go off on yourself, be nice, and read and chant. You know what I'm saying? It's better than nothing, but it's not the ideal.
It's not what Lord Chaitanya recommends.
No, it's not the recommend. Okay. But, you know, it'll have its, it'll do something. Okay? Then we have 76 here, your review questions and the essay question. Right? And then we move on to chapter 4. Appearance of Sri Narada. Okay, so now this is the, how you say, the there are, how do you say, I'm not sure what the acharyas use, if they've used any particular terms. See, you have, as we're working here, the questions. These questions generate different discussions. And in the discussions, there's different major topics, you know, like that. So here in the first canto, basically this is the discussion of the sages, right? But in their topics being discussed, these first three chapters are basically one group, right? They're answering the questions and setting the tone. Now the next two chapters, they establish, you know, basically about the Bhagavatam being spoken, but the element of that, without understanding the need for expressing directly about pure devotional service, that generally people don't catch actually what you're talking about. And as a more subtle element, this is where Vyasadeva gets the, here's the Chintabheda Veda Tattva. So that will take his understanding from the Vedanta philosophy that he has before, because he understands all the aspects of it. You know, the oneness, the difference, and the oneness and difference. Right? So then, now it's seeing that simultaneously, that gives rise to how the Bhagavatam can function. You know, in other words, how does all these things, how can you be engaged in all these activities within the, engaging the conditioning, but be functioning on pure devotional service? Because basically before, it's more presented, here's engaging them, and then there's pure devotional service. Not that they were ever separate, but it's kind of like, the discussion is about engaging the senses in karma yoga, jnana yoga, jnana yoga. And then there's pure devotional service is described. They're not described as one thing. It Krishna mentions, but it's not brought out to the point like the Bhagavatam is, right? Does that make sense? So then you're going to have these aspects. Within the dialogue, there's major sections. Right? So now we're moving to another section. Yeah. Chapter 4, the appearance of Sri Narada. Pratigya. The Pratigya of this chapter is taken from verses 32 and to 33. As mentioned before, Narad reached the cottage of Krishna Dwaipayana Vyas on the banks of the Saraswati, just as Vyas was regretting his defects. At the auspicious arrival of Sri Narada, Sri Vyas got up respectfully and worshipped him, giving him veneration equal to that given to Brahmaji, the creator. From the purport to verse 33, Vidhi means Brahma, the first created being. He is the original student as well as professor of the Vedas. He learned it from Sri Krishna and taught Narada first. So Narada is the second Acharya in the line of spiritual disciplic succession. He is the representative of Brahma, and therefore he is respected exactly like Brahma, the father of all Vidhi's regulations. Certainly, because Vidhi means regulation, so he's known as that. Similarly, all other successive disciples in the chain are also equally respected as representatives of the original spiritual master. Right?
Yes. When you say that Narada is also the
master? No, because Narada is Narada. Brahma is opposed, but Narada is not opposed. Narada is the same person. Like that. Does that make sense? Like Sukadeva Goswami is not a post, it's a person. Right? So in other words, all these positions will be fulfilled in the Lord's spiritual material pastimes. But it's whether it's a post or it's permanently held by one person. Like that. So Narada always does it. It's like Narada in the last, like he talks about how he was in the last creation the son of a maidservant. But he became that because of the curse of the demigods as a Gandharvan. He became that because of the arrangement of Lord Brahma. So he's Narad Muni, and then just at the very end, when the universe is about to finish, then he goes through that pastime, then appears as Narad Muni. Does that make sense? Yeah, so he's always there. Yeah, also equally respected as representatives of the original spiritual master. Similarly, all other successive disciples. Right? So that principle is always applied. It's not about, only if they're a nitya siddha then we'll apply it or something. No, it applies like that. Yes.
Can we expect that every student can be a teacher?
Every student can be a teacher to some capacity, whether they what capacity that is. But every student will be a teacher. That's Lord Chaitanya's point, is that whoever you see, whoever you meet, some students would tell them about Krishna. That's so everybody can be teacher, but it's just a matter of what capacity you're teaching.
According to realization?
According to realization, according to facility, according to ability. Yes. Like somebody can travel and preach, somebody else can't.
Yes.
Like that. So it's just a matter of what is the nature, what is the facility. But everybody can preach. The guy's working in the kitchen washing pots, But every day the supply man comes in with his truck and unloads the truck with the vegetables and all that, and he's the one that has to go out and get it. You can also preach to him, give him prasad, chant, Hare Krishna, like this, like that. So he can do something. Like that. So everybody. Chapter 4 summarizes questions and answers. In chapter 4, the sages ask several questions which can be summarized as follows. Question 7, 141 through 13. O Suta Goswami, may you please relate the pious message of Srimad Bhagavatam as spoken by Srila Sukadeva Goswami. Answer. Suta Goswami begins the answer in 114 through 33. He continues to answer question 7 throughout the rest of the first canto. Adhyaya Prakashika. The fourth chapter declares the excellence of the speaker and the hearer of the Bhagavatam. Also the story of Vyasa's despondency, despite compiling and editing the Vedic literatures, is also told. Chanaka Rishi inquires from Suta Goswami about the history of Sukadeva Goswami speaking the Bhagavatam to Maharaj Parikit. Suta tells how Veda Vyas compiled and edited the Vedic literatures for the benefit of unfortunate souls of Kali Yuga, even after his great work was completed.
Yes.
He's a team man. So as soon as he got, yeah! Even after his great work was complete, Veda Vyas still felt dissatisfied, right? Because this is the Mahabharata. It's glorified as, you know, it's nothing like this has ever been written before. So already it's the novel literature. But now the sages have already heard this. Now there's a new novel literature.
But it's not material.
That it's not material. Just as he was contemplating the cause of his despondency, his spiritual master, Narad Muni, appeared. Shloka Anushana. Summary of verses 1 through 13. Shaunaka inquires from Suta Goswami about the history of Sukadeva Goswami speaking of the Bhagavatam to Maharaj Parikit. So this opens up why it would be spoken. That's why he gives it, you know, a definite thing now. But at the same time, it will take the rest of the first canto to accomplish how that discussion went on. In verses 14 to 33, Suta Goswami describes Srila Vyasadeva's despondency. Right? So now it's having inquired, now this becomes the topic, right? But this is a subtopic of this topic. And those are subtopics of the topics about, you know, hearing about the Lord and how, like that, and what Sukadeva Goswami spoke. So, verses 1 to 13. Shaunaka inquires from Suta Goswami about the history of Sukadeva Goswami speaking of the Bhagavatam to Maharaj Parikit. Jagannath Kirtan's not here, otherwise he always appreciates these lovely things. So in other words, here, then, we're hearing about what Pandava Bandava compiled from what Sahota Maharaj himself organized together about Shonika's, what, you know, Srila Prabhupada's putting together, what is Shonika's inquiries from Suta Goswami about the history of Sukadeva Goswami speaking of the Bhagavatam to Maharaj Parikit.
Six levels.
Yeah, so then we have... Yeah. So it's supposed to get better, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. In the previous chapter, the sages asked about the Bhagavatam's history. O Suta, what novel scripture, unheard of before this time, are you reciting? Suta Goswami replied in 1340 through 44, describing the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam. Because otherwise, he's opening with this, but they want to know, what is this? Right? Like that.
Yes.
The answer was very satisfying to the sages and prompted further inquiries. Naturally, okay, well, how did it come about? Where is it from? What is this, you know?
Yeah.
The first verse of this chapter is spoken by Srila Vyasadeva. He repeats the congratulations that Shaunaka Rishi offered Suta Goswami after Suta had introduced the Srimad Bhagavatam in the previous chapter as particularly being the literary incarnation of Godhead amongst all Vedic scriptures. Right? So, we'll see is Vyasadeva being the author. Now and again, there are verses directly spoken by him. Right? They're always here and there, generally in junctures between something. There's either a major change of the speaker or of the conversation or of the topic or something. So he'll come up here. So this is one of the things to, you know, it means it gives, it's not that it's important for understanding the Bhagavatam. It's useful for knowing where things are in the Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
You know, which conversation, which part of the conversation, or different like that. So that's the... He repeats the congratulations... Okay, that was a good attempt. Okay, here what he's saying. Quote, on hearing Suta Goswami speak thus, Shaunaka Muni, who was the elderly, learned leader of all the rishis engaged in that prolonged sacrificial ceremony, congratulated Suta Goswami by addressing him as follows. Shaunaka said, O Suta Goswami, you are the most fortunate, respected of all those who can speak and recite. Please relate the pious message of Srimad Bhagavatam, which was spoken by the great and powerful sage Sukadeva Goswami. It's verses 1 and 2. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary to 141, because he was the eldest by age, Vridha, superior by family lineage, Kulapati, and superior by knowledge acquired through studying the Veda, Bhavricha, Shaunaka was chosen by the sages to ask the questions, right? So that's generally the tradition, is in an assembly, means good questions get good answers. Not so good questions get not so good answers, you know.
Right, how is it?
Stupid? I think it's like my mother would say, ask a stupid question, get a stupid answer.
You could make a book, Stupid Questions, Stupid Answers.
Yes, that would be... Yeah, so one will see is that in the class, when people ask a good question, you get really good, you know, discussions. When they ask something not so wonderful, then, you know, it can be very distracting, right? You know.
Yes. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also says it's easy to find a qualified teacher, but hard to find a qualified student.
Yeah, this point is one teacher can teach many people, so therefore... It's not like you need a whole room full of them. You know, a whole room full of them that can preach around the world. Prabhupada, I think Prabhupada mentioned that there were 8 of him that he could, you know, take the whole world. Not that he couldn't do it himself, but he just meaning that you don't need that many. You know, so we have this idea, you know, you keep making it more and more involved in how you get ISKCON to run, but actually you just need a few dedicated men. Right, and that whole thing makes the whole thing work.
Right.
That's the whole idea. Someone's dedicated to preaching, it'll work.
Yes.
Like that. There's, you know, management others can do.
Yes.
You know, it's just like you have the idea how for the building, how it'll be used nicely for Krishna and preaching. Engineers and car contractors and laborers can build it.
Yes.
You know, you don't have to include that in the whole scheme. That's just the side thing. You know, the real point is you've organized it, you know, then you have to do something. The preaching, the association, that's the real thing. Right? So,
just chronologically, Sukadeva Goswami was present when Sukadeva Goswami was talking to Maharaj Pariksit.
Sukadeva.
Sukadeva Goswami.
Yes, he was present.
And Shaunaka Rishi, that's different?
That's different. Means, in other words, Sukadeva Goswami spoke to Pariksit Maharaj on the bank of the Ganga. Right, which then is identified, I think, by the Acharyas as Jamuna, because it's the same river. It splits at one point. So, So then, he spoke there. Vyasadeva was also present, like that, and then all other great sages and everything from all throughout the universe, you know, came. I think there's that pastime of Lord Shiva coming with on the swan. Yeah, he borrowed his father's wheels. And so they were all there for hearing that. Sutta Goswami was also there. He heard, then he went back, then in his travels, you know, from there he went up through, that was in Mahabharata. He went from there up to Kurukshetra and then down to Naimisharanya. So they're sitting at Naimisharanya. So then he comes there and speaks. But all the Mahabharata and all the other Puranas have all been spoken there by Sutta after hearing it wherever it was spoken. Like that. Does that make sense? So he heard Mahabharata, then went and spoke there, and Sutta and Shaunaka Rishi was the one to ask the questions. So this idea that means everybody can ask questions, but it should be a good question. But otherwise, then it shouldn't be a problem if one person is asking good questions and they ask, but because of the modern concept, then they get shy and stop asking questions because, give everybody else a chance, but nobody else is asking questions. You know, like that. But it's opposed to the modern educational system. The modern educational system is... You know, the teacher says something, ask a question. If one person always answers, it's not appreciated. But the point is in teaching, you know, it's a matter of you ask a question, there should be answers. So if one person knows it, then the teacher can explain it. It's been heard. But the idea is, no, everybody should ask. But nobody's asking. So then the teacher gets frustrated, you know, like that. And so it doesn't work very well. You know what I'm saying? So it's a modern concept that this...
Yes.
is it's not about qualified people asking questions. It's more about everybody asking. It's not meaning that if someone, anybody who has a good question can ask, that's fine. You know, it's just like anybody can be the prime minister, but they should be qualified, right? Does that make sense? So you have to be able to balance, because the modern always, it's this or that. You know, it's either this guy does and it's, you know, totally controlled and no one gets to ask, or everybody gets to ask and nothing actually happens. Because one, nobody asks, or if they do ask, it's not very good.
And Maharaj, but there's a sage in the Bhagavatam, it's only Shonakarishi who's asking a question. But the other sage is get the same benefit.
You get the same benefit. Because the point is the question is asked or the answer is given. So you might not have thought of that. But also here he's Kulapati. Right? So he's also, what is he? Superior by family lineage, Kulapati. Right? Yes. So then he is you could either take that is his position, his background, Brahminical background, was a very good stature, the particular gotra, the particular, you know, lineage, whatever it is very special. Or it can mean family lineage, meaning within that family of those sages, he's the, so that kula, you know, that family, he's the pati, he's the leader. So in other words, everybody there is following his lead. So then nobody else is going to feel a problem. So they're all like, they're all his students.
Yes.
Right? So in this case, and then Suta Goswami is coming and speaking to all of them. But technically what it is, on one level, is Suta Goswami is speaking to Shonaka, and then they're all getting the benefit. So actually Shonaka is the disciple of Suta. The sages are the disciple of Shonaka.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Yes. So, because he's Kulapati.
Yes.
Like that. So it can mean, from what I can see, it could mean either of those aspects. Because he's mentioned, one may say, no, but why only look at that? Because they've mentioned study of the Veda, but they also mention eldest by age.
Yes.
Right? So then, naturally, then family lineage comes in, so then everybody is happy to hear. Otherwise, if, you know, if the Kulapati is hearing, in this case, then Mahabharata must be good. The Puranas must be good, because he is of a great stature. He's asking the questions, so it makes it very relevant. You know, so then your general person would appreciate. But at the same time, it's not age. It's not, you know, family lineage. It's not just study, a thorough study of the scriptures, but it's whether there's one's connected through the parampara and is heard rightly, right? Yes. Srila Prabhupada elaborates. In a meeting of learned men, when there are congratulations or addresses for the speaker, the qualifications of the congratulator should be as follows. He must be the leader of the house and an elderly man, right? So it's not that just anybody does it. Right, because sometimes you see in the class, they say, oh yeah, it's so nice, and you did this, and that, and we so would appreciate it, and everybody else is going, when's he going to ask a question? You understand? But if the senior person does that, everybody, no one will think, you know, when's he going to ask a question?
Yes.
The leader of the house and an elderly man, because then from all, both is, you know, they'll be respected. He must be vastly learned also. Sri Shonaka Rishi had all these qualifications. This is in a meeting of learned men. This general, that's another thing. And thus he stood up to congratulate Sri Suta Goswami when he expressed his desire to present Srimad Bhagavatam exactly as he heard it from Sukadev Goswami, and also realized it personally. So here also we see is that, having dealt with these first three chapters, when they opened, because they also glorified him, and then asked the six questions. Now he's you know, in essence, answered those six questions. So now it's now again glorification and further questioning, right? You know, these aren't like some fine question in between. This is like some major
questions.
Yes. Yes.
Sukadev Swami, he was not an elderly man, or
no. That's why the whole point is there are always these exceptions. So yeah. Sukadev is only 16. we see Parasara Muni, he was only 8 at the time, or maybe he was 9, you know, not that much of a difference. And who was elderly was Markandeya, who was Chiranjeev. Right? So that means he appeared at the beginning, you know, it means, in other words, after Brahma, when everybody else, he's from that generation. You know, in other words, that first, you know, day of Brahma. Right?
He's been around
a while. Yeah. So then, you know, that whole time. Most likely even you could say within the first Manvantar. So that would be basically all these great. So they've been around for that time. So they're special. And so you have much more of an extremity there. You know, you have, you know, Vyasadeva, but Narad Muni is also from that time. You know, Brahma, you know, they're all from that time. So here you have they're coming and hearing, and Sukadeva. So then it's the same principle. That's why these are always there. These others are a matter of etiquette, but it's not the rule as far as who understands spiritual subject matter. But that's the etiquette. Right? But the point is, a sense amongst Brahmins, it's knowledge. The one who has that, you know, in other words, one, you're going to be the vastness of knowledge, but then there's going to be the realization of the knowledge, and then there's going to be the devotional aspect. So whoever has that combination that comes out to be more, they're the speaker. Right? So maybe others have age, but age is the least of all of them in weight. Knowledge is much more, devotion is more than that. Does that make sense? You know, there's also that aspect of practical application. So we can see is that he's applied it very nicely, Sukadeva Goswami, even in just that time running away from home and bumping into them at the at the Ganga there. So then that time, that realization, that practical application is very great.
And Maharaj, you were mentioning that from time to time, after question answer, there is glorification.
We see that it comes up. It's natural. I'm just saying it's natural here, the glorification. When we say, why glorify? Why not just ask another question? Because he just answered their last set of questions so wonderfully. Right? And he's, you know, they can understand about the Bhagavatam, and he's the qualified person to speak the Bhagavatam. So therefore, we'll see there'll be more. You know, they'll come up. It'll be all through.
Giving more inspiration.
Yes. What we see is that there was so much in the first chapter. You know, we have met your grace by the will of Providence.
Yes.
So this, it's just a standard point. But what is the Prabhupada saying here is, it's not just anybody should do it. They should actually have some qualifications. Like I remember once I was serving Prashad, I think to Mankishmarsh in Vrindavan, when he was Prabhupada's servant, those last Kartik. And so I was serving Prashad, and I was the cook, and I was serving. So that was the standard thing I was doing. Well, Bhakti Chumars was the cook, I was the assistant cook. But most of the time I ended up, either he'd cook or sometimes I ended up cooking because he had to be with Prabhupada. But I arranged the service and everything like that. So then we were serving, and I noticed that there'd be a certain response in how Tamal Krishnamars and you know, Bhavananda and the others who were Jayapadakumars there, what they respond to the service. You know, it's generally very formal and everything like that. But then when the Dachanmars came, he was the president in Mayapur. And even amongst presidents, he was quite senior. You know, because being in Mayapur and the size of the project and nothing, you know, very few had that large of a project. And so when he would come, and when he'd come there, then he would serve Prashad. And so then afterwards once, but the reciprocation was totally different. You know, much more friendly and intimate and this and that. So I asked him, Mal Krishnamaraj, I said, why? Why is this interaction like that happening? And you know, he says, you know, what's the difference? He says, it means there may be the obvious of the skill, but basically because I had learned from Nittai Chandras how to serve, so then there wouldn't have been that much difference in that aspect, you know. And so then Tamal Krishnamaraj made the point, no, because he's senior. Because I was junior, just a, you know, the brahmachari here, you know, but he's the temple president, actually took sannyas later to Brahmacharya then also. But he was the president. He was major, you know, very, you know, worked with everybody in the GBC and this kind of thing. He made all the arrangements. So he says, Here you have a senior person who, you know, in that assembly that's there, could sit with them and eat.
Yes.
But he's serving. He says, that's what's the further taste. That's what's greater. Right? So the same thing here is that because of the qualifications, that's why it comes, it's better. It's nicer. Everybody's satisfied. Right? While if a junior person does it, it may not be have glorified to the extent that they could have, or asked the question to the extent that they could have.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Have a different mood.
Yeah, mood's different. So this is it saying in the meeting of learned men. One, learned men means those who know about Krishna, but it can also mean of those who actually have some. Right? In other words, if there's a group of very senior devotees who are discussing some very, you know, deep topic, then some new person who's sitting there shouldn't just, you know, they give, you know, one says something and someone else gives a realization, they don't go, yeah, I also had, you know, one should avoid that. That's the etiquette, you know, but it's one is careful. So he expressed his desire. Okay. Thus he stood up to congratulate Sri Suta Goswami when he expressed his desire to present Srimad Bhagavatam exactly as he heard it from Sukadev Goswami, and also realized it personally. Personal realization does not mean that one should, out of vanity, attempt to show one's own learning by trying to surpass the previous acharya. That's the whole point. That was the problem that Lord Chaitanya didn't appreciate in Vallabha Bhatta, because he had the means, how do you say? No, the Bhatta is the title, Acharya is just the respect. Means, does that make sense? The same.
Yeah.
So then, that he's saying, oh, I've written better than Sridhar Swami. No, it's not that one doesn't try to surpass, one tries to elucidate on what is given. One may give a more analytical aspect of what was revealed. But it's not that it couldn't have been, but that was how much was necessary at the time, right? Because as Prabhupada mentioned, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he sent the book to the West, he could have done it, right? But he left it for us, right? He could have gotten on the boat, gone to England, he could have done that. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, but he left it, Prabhupada said, he left it for us. And Prabhupada could have done the whole thing, but he left something for us to do. Right? Otherwise, what are we going to do? sitting down and chanting, a few lakhs of names every day and just, accepting prasad whenever it comes along unasked, that's probably not going to be a general, activity. So therefore, we have to have something to do. He must have full confidence in previous acharya. You can't have doubts. Well, this one says this, that one says that, and they seem contradictory. Yeah. If that's there, don't present. Yeah. In other words, stick to just what you can understand, like that. Yeah. If you have a doubt. In other words, you may have a doubt, you contemplate it, you discuss it with others, like that, but you don't present it. You don't present doubts.
Yes.
Right? People have enough doubts. They don't need this. He must have full confidence in the previous acharya, and at the same time, he must realize the subject matter so nicely that he can present the matter for the particular circumstances in a suitable manner. Right? So, for the particular audience, right? So if he understands it, they'll understand. If he doesn't understand it, they won't understand. It's simple. The original purpose of the text must be maintained. Right? It can't go off into some other thing and be used however you like. It's got to be. No obscure meaning should be screwed out of it, yet it should be presented in an interesting manner for the understanding of the audience. Right? It shouldn't be obscure, right? But it should be presented in an interesting way. Right? So,
eclectic examples.
Yes, like potatoes. Right? But they're how you say? Interesting, but understandable.
Yes, we can relate.
Yes. This is called realization. The leader of the assembly, Shonaka, could estimate the value of the speaker, Sri Suta Goswami, simply by his uttering yatadhitam and yatamati. And therefore he was very glad to congratulate him in ecstasy. right? Because it's just so nicely presented. No learned man should be willing to hear a person who does not represent the original acharya. If they're not speaking according to or going against, you're not obliged, right?
Yes.
That's the whole point. It means just like Shukadev stood up. I mean, Shonaka stood up. You can do that. But in this one, he stood up and glorified because it was in line with the charis. Otherwise, you stand up and leave.
Yes.
It's like there's no obligation to hear from people who are not supporting the acharya. It's not. There is no obligation. They can say whatever anybody wants. No, this is not etiquette. No, that's not, you know, culture. No, it doesn't matter. No, culture is getting up and walking out. Unculture is a staying.
Yes.
You understand? That's the point. Like that. So no learned man should be willing to hear a person who does not represent the original acharya. It's just not done. No one does it. Right? Even amongst the Mayavadis, you're not supposed to speak against Shankara and the other acharyas. If you do, it's not proper etiquette. Mm. It's just nobody does it. The Nyayas, the Mimamsakas, nobody does it. Mm. It's not cultured.
Mm.
So, the speaker and the audience were bona fide in this meeting where Bhagavatam was being recited for the second time. That should be the standard of recitation of Bhagavatam. So it is the real purpose that can be served, and Lord Krishna can be realized without difficulty. Therefore, Prabhupada has the Bhagavatam class spoken by the devotees, not by just anybody.
Yes.
You know, and by there, because they'll present what's in line with the acharyas. Right?
Yes.
Unless this situation is created, Bhagavatam recitation will be for ulterior purposes. And such recitation is useless labor, both for the speaker and for the audience. Okay, so then we'll end there for today. So that's what Prabhupada has established. That's what he's set up. Right? So then you should appreciate it. We see it's just as simple as, oh, it's a managerial thing. No, it's that he's managed to organize a morning program. And, you know, and activities that we do all through our day and life, that's exactly in line with scriptures. And it's not everybody's neophytes, just do some simple thing. No, it's on the topmost standard. Just, he's giving that opportunity for neophytes to take care of. So you have to be very, very careful that in establishing time, place, and circumstance, where one is establishing or doing something for newer persons or less realized persons, that what you give them should not be of lesser standard.
Yes.
It just should be the high standard in a simple fashion.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes.
So the ideal attitude would be just to stand and let somebody say something against the acharya.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not defending or trying to.
If you can do it, then you defend. If you can, just walk out. But you also, it has to be that the defense will actually be appreciated by somebody, either the person or the audience. You know. But then, if it's the audience appreciates, then you have to stay long enough, because otherwise, if you leave, then the person will counteract it. So you know, it's, in other words, these are your options: you can defeat it, or you can walk away. But you know. Because most likely you wouldn't take the line of cutting out the tongue, you know, or killing yourself. So you know, these two options are left. So the easiest of all of them, unless it's obvious that you can, you know, speak something and have an effect, then it's just to leave.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Sahaveta Bhaktivinoda ki
jai.
Jai. Go with the Prabhupada.